Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on episode 60 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, in the flesh, is Jared Gimbel, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And the title for this particular Footmarks podcast is Rain, Curse, Choke or Shine. And it's on South Africa's World Cup exits. Now, unfortunately for the Proteas, the shine bit hasn't happened for them in World Cup cricket thus far. But you've been covering South Africa's World Cup howlers for a long time now, Jared. What is the one recurring theme that holds true in your analysis for South Africa in those knockout games?
I think it is that they generally bat too slow. And I think that is not, if you ask an average person off the street, I don't think that's what you would get. But I think if you go through it, I think they generally bat too slow. I actually think, and I don't know if I'd ever be able to sell it because it's South Africa, but I actually think that there's a great book in it.
Yeah, I agree.
But I do think if you go through the amount of important games, and like I'm looking right over your shoulder here at the board that where I've written everything down. Yes. The thing that I noticed was how often they just bat too slow and how that is probably not talked about enough. And we probably talk about rain too much.
Yes.
Whereas actually, I think they get themselves in a lot of the chokes are probably not chokes. They're situations where they never were in front of the game in the way they should have been.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up because I'm going first to the 1992 World Cup semi-final, the ODI World Cup. This is the first major event that South Africa were part of post-apartheid, right? And their reintegration. And you could say
the first actual ICC event they were in was the 1910 tri-series, which started the ICC. That actually rained a lot as well, by the way. And they didn't win that either.
Yeah, so this is that semi-final in 92, where I feel in the campaign, you'd have to say, given that they just came back into the international fold, South Africa kind of overachieved and they were up against a fantastic English team in the semi who were favorites to lift the trophy. And this is the game that's famous, you know, with respect to rain and how after the rain, they needed what? 22 of 2 deliveries or something like that. I can't remember the exact equation.
21 of 1, wasn't it? But yeah. It was actually written wrong on the scoreboard as well.
It was an ungettable situation. And most people think of this game when they think of rain in South Africa. But actually, based on the conversation we had prior to this podcast, rain was only partially responsible for screwing South Africa over. It wasn't entirely responsible.
I think they needed 22 of 13, which is, I'm just going off the top of my head, but that's my memory of it. Which was really difficult anyway.
Yes, back in that day.
Yeah, like you're unlikely to win a game in that situation. And then on top of that, if Duckworth Lewis had been there, I still think, and it's very hard to tell because South Africa didn't bowl their full overs in the first innings because they purposely went slow to try and game the game. So again, but if Duckworth Lewis had been there, they still would have been in a situation where they would have been a long way behind. The ridiculousness, though, was that they didn't get a chance to go out and face the final 13 balls because only one ball was left, and then they had to score the 21 runs. So it looked worse than it was, and it was a terrible rain rule. But they chose to bowl first on a day when they thought it was going to rain, and they purposely made it a less overs game by the way that they went against it. And then they lost a lot of wickets.
Yeah.
So in many different ways, I think you'd have to say that the rain maybe meant that there was no chance of winning.
Yep.
But I think they probably would have lost anyway.
Yeah. Interesting, because 22 of 13 in 92 is a really tough ask.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, people make it seem like, oh, rain knocked them out. And it did in a way, because it completely eliminated all possibilities of them moving forward. But they also had themselves to blame with respect to the style that they played with, right?
Definitely.
Coming to 1996 ODI.
You like this one, don't you?
Yeah, I love this one.
Because you didn't know much about
this. No, you literally educated me on this prior to this particular podcast. It's the 1996 ODI World Cup. It's a quarterfinal game versus the West Indies, a strong West Indian side, and it's in Karachi, right? South Africa drop Alan Donald, one of their best ever seamers in history, right? And they play Paul Adams ahead of him. Now, I actually looked at the scorecard and I was like, there surely has got to be one other bowler that they could have rested, even if they were hell-bent on playing Paul Adams, right? Yeah. And there was Craig Matthews in that team who could have sat that one out and Donald could have played. And Brian Lara played an all-timer knock. He scored 111 and it was like at a strike rate higher than 100. And he absolutely decimated Paul Adams. So, not really a choke. They fell short by 19 runs or so.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'd have to say they were outplayed, and it was just a very terrible selection call.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
I mean, I don't, this is why I think a book on this topic would be really fascinating, because how did they end up making this call? I know what they were worried about. They were worried about Lara specifically making runs. So they wanted someone who would spin the ball away from him. They had Simcox, then they had Adams. The issue was that they didn't, no one really knew much about Adams. I think he'd only played a handful of games at that point. And I think they thought, well, we'll throw the mystery spinner in, maybe that will work. Adams is just too slow. And Lara just literally cuts him to death over and over again. And it ends up, if I'm not mistaken, I think Adams bowls at the start of the game. And then Lara goes out and he comes back on in like the 37th over or the 40th over or something, because they couldn't bowl him when Lara was there. So look, I think West Indies and Australia, because they both forfeited games in to Sri Lanka.
Yeah, that happened too.
Yeah, I think it would have been a really interesting World Cup if Sri Lanka had to go through both of them, because I think they were the two other best sides. And so I don't think it's a choke, but it's a baffling decision. You didn't know who Craig Matthews was.
No, I didn't.
And even when you said it to me, I was like, is that the guy? I think I got him confused with Brett Schultz. I was like, is that the left armer? And I was like, no, I remember Craig Matthews. He was the Steve Elworthy of 1996. And look, no offense to Steve Elworthy or Matthews. They're both good cricketers. But if you've got Alan Donald, who's got 250 wickets and an average of 21, why are you dropping him? Especially because he can get Lara out early.
In 1996, by the way, this is not an old Alan Donald. This is peak Alan Donald. Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, maybe we'd have to go through it line by line to see what his form was. But you look at that on paper and you go, that's probably not ideal.
Yeah, absolutely not. I'm going to go in chronological order. So, just I'm going to touch base with you. Are you emotionally ready for 1999?
I feel like I could write a thesis on 1999.
Yeah, you definitely could. I've learned a lot about that game through you. And you were, of course, what, a teenager back then?
19.
Yeah, so 19 and 1999, interesting. Anyway, so that semi-final versus Australia was in Edgbaston, which according to Tim Payne is the 16th most intimidating place
to play. If I remember correctly.
Cricket, yeah. And then there was no rain in this game, of course. And this is probably that one fixture due to which the whole C word being tagged with South Africa became mainstream, right? This gave birth to the C word with respect to South African cricket in many ways. But it wasn't an absolute joke also, because there were times where Australia choked in this game. It was a bit of a choke-off in a weird way, and South Africa ultimately, you know, fell short. I mean, don't get me wrong, the run-out was bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you just focus on the run-out, you're like, well, South Africa choked. Australia dropped Klusner. Pretty simple chance straight to Paul Rifle. South Africa had got behind in the game, so if I remember correctly, they were number for 60 or 15, which is a good start chasing whatever it was, 213. It was 213, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was a low score, so maybe that could
it
be
wasn't
factored
that
in.
Low a score for that era. I mean, it wasn't high, but Australia defended those sorts of totals all the time. Think about 2003. Australia was still defending those totals, right? So they were about 60 odd without loss, but Kirsten and Cullinan went incredibly slow. And so when they lost Gibbs and then they lost Cronier, they actually went from being behind the rates a little bit, but in front of the game, to behind altogether.
Big time.
And so at that stage, they actually did really well to get back not only into the game, but in front. But they kept making weird decisions. Like Klusner was the greatest batter of all time in that tournament. And they were like, they moved him further down the order.
Yep. Pollock was promoted ahead of him. And this is Lance Klusner on steroids, basically. Yeah, yeah. That is arguably one of the best World Cup campaigns ever. And they demoted him, so that doesn't make sense either. Also, the slow batting at the start, I think Cullinan was, what, 6 off 30?
I think he was, yeah.
Something like that, so that was the score. Callis scored a slow 50.
Yeah, Callis was in forever. So you look at that and you think to yourself, it wasn't like they were cruising to victory. And then, it's all well and good to say they choked on the run out.
Yes.
Right? Which is fine. But it's a choke does suggest that you're in front of the game.
Yes.
I think if you need one run with one wicket in hand, you're not in front of the game. We saw a counter game the other day. Did you see the highlights of this where the scores were tied?
Yes, I saw the highlights of that.
it's hard to score a run off the last ball sometimes.
The keeper took a catch without the glove on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So you see madness at the end of those games, right? And I do think there was an element of that.
I mean, South Africa, I think why people call it that big a joke is because they survived a run out.
It was also, it was the earlier part. I think it's because he found it so easy to hit the boundaries in the early part of that over. People have forgotten that he was still doing it with a number 11.
Yeah.
And anything could have gone wrong.
Hmm.
I mean, what did they need off that last over? Was it nine to win, right? Hmm. We even in those days, we would have said money's more often than not on the bowling side at the start of that over. And even now, you got nine off the last over. You think to yourself, we got a chance here.
Of course.
Right? So I think if you factor all that in, look, it was a choke in that all they needed was one simple conversation. Hmm. And I also don't think you can just focus on the fact that there was a run out, as you said. There was two run outs.
Exactly. I feel like that kind of magnifies the joke, because if you're nine wickets down and there is, you know, a dismissal, then I mean, that's how the sport is at times. But the fact that it was a run out and
I'll take it further. They were in front in the previous game.
That's true. So that's what I was going to ask you.
So I do think overall you would have to say it was a choke. And if they win that previous game, they would have gone through, right?
It was a joke, but it wasn't a generational joke.
No, there's worse jokes, as we will come up to.
Yes, absolutely. But just on that previous game, right, the one in which Herschel Gibbs dropped Steve Waugh, and then Steve Waugh supposedly said that you've dropped the World Cup.
It's not what he said, but he roughly said.
Yeah, that's what he likes to say that he said.
No, well, he's been honest and said the proper phrase, but it's too late now.
Yeah.
It's like played against Sam, played Casablanca one more time. Doesn't sound as good as played against Sam, right?
Yeah, and he took that game completely away from South Africa. Would you call that a bigger choke than the semi?
Yes, but this is where the whole choke thing becomes ridiculous, right? Mm. Because is that a choke or is that just the game they didn't win?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because that wasn't a knockout.
That's true.
And they thought they had a chance of kicking Australia out of the tournament at that stage. So there's an element of that, but it's not the same as you could get kicked out of the tournament.
Hmm, that's true. And yeah, I mean, I feel like just because of the lore and the fact that it's such a celebrated game in the history of our sport, it doesn't help South Africa because people just love to throw that narrative.
No, of course.
And the C word is often misused. At times it's not, but often misused.
All C words.
In the 2023 ODI World Cup, when they lost to Australia, which was not a joke by any means, people were calling that a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because it's South Africa, right?
They actually played a really good game in that one.
Yeah, they came back from nowhere and Steve Smith kind of just helped Australia hang on and then got out later. And it was quite an entertaining game. Anyway, let's come to 2003.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite South African World Cup exits. It was in the group stage. It was South Africa's home World Cup. The first time there was a World Cup or any ICC event, I believe, perhaps held in South Africa, right?
I would assume so.
Yeah, it was a game versus a pretty good Sri Lankan side in Durban. This is the game in which Sangakkara sledged Pollock, which if you guys haven't seen, go to YouTube and search that clip. The weight of all these expectations, we'll never forget that. And rain took center stage in this game. Mm. South Africa got knocked out via DLS. Sri Lanka's put up a decent total, 260-odd. Marvin Adepatu, he scored 100. And then South Africa started off well. Then they lost wickets. But funnily enough, as much as people like to blame rain in this one, it was a mathematical fuck-up by Mark Boucher because he hit a six and then he blocked out the last delivery thinking that South Africa were ahead on DLS. They weren't. South Africa got knocked out. But then you could also say that these were the early days of DLS.
Yeah.
So we can somewhat excuse Boucher.
I've talked to cricketers who said they didn't know the rules until that game.
Mm.
They would have thought the same as Boucher. Obviously, the communication should have been better and they should have understood that. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that.
Mm.
But, you know, it's not a choke. It was a mistake.
Yes.
But again, they were in that situation because they'd lost a lot of wickets.
Mm. But what I find funny is that two of the most often spoken of rain curses that South Africa have had are not really that big.
Yeah, I know.
Rain.
I think it's more that just because so many of the, and you know, there's at least one more that we have on our list. There are quite a few times when rain has played a part. Whether it is necessarily the defining factor, I would say, you know, based on everything that I've looked at, it's definitely not the defining factor.
It is a factor. No one's denying that, of course.
Yeah, but there's plenty of other times they've stuffed up without any rain.
Yeah, that's true. Coming to 2009, I'm skipping 2007 because Australia absolutely mutilated
them. So I just looked at the ones where I thought it was, you know, they had a chance. 2007 is they were not in that game.
Although they had a fine team, but that was one of the best ODI teams of all time that Australia were fielding, right? Yeah. I feel like that was probably a stronger team than 2003 for Australia.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's the strongest thing we've ever seen at a World Cup.
Yeah, basically. So I'm going to come to 2009 T20 World Cup semi-final versus Pakistan at Trent Bridge. This is the Afridi game.
Mm-hmm.
There was no rain here. And South Africa were heavy favorites, not just to win the semi, but the tournament altogether. People were talking of them in that kind of breath.
Important to remember, it wasn't a World Cup at that stage.
Yeah, it was the World T20. But still, I mean, it was technically World Cup.
No, I know. I'm just saying they were favorites. People were like, oh, this isn't a World Cup. They can win it.
If you need your pitch change, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Yeah, Afridi, I remember, scored a half century at first drop. Yeah. That's the first time Yunus promoted him. And
50 off 35 or something
like that. But Pakistan didn't score a lot of runs. They got to 149. Mm. And South Africa, they lost by 7 runs in the end, but with 5 wickets in hand. And that was after 15 runs in the final over.
Yeah.
So it wasn't particularly close. There was one point, I believe, in that game where I don't know why Yunus gave the ball to Fawad Alam and Callis took him on. And that was the only time in the game where
Callis hit a ball.
Yeah, people felt that maybe South Africa have this because that was a fantastic Pakistan team at defending totals.
Yeah.
They were really, really good at that. They had Ajmal, Gul and Afridi. Yeah. Afridi got both Gibbs and de Villiers, you know, in quick succession. That was basically the killer blow, the combo breaker, if you will. And then Ajmal was not going for any runs. And I remember the penultimate over by Gul was like, what, 6 Yorkers?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So you would have to say that South Africa ultimately were undone by spin. And another one of those games where they slowed down unnecessarily and lost the plot. Where would you put this on the choke meter?
Yeah, I didn't have it very high on a choke meter because you watched that game and I remember watching it live at the time and I never really thought they had it in control. I know 149 wasn't a lot, but I thought it was a good total in that game at that time. And so I thought they were in a really good position on Pakistan. And then South Africa didn't really put any pressure back on them, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have thought it was a choke. I mean, running into Afridi is a bit unlucky because, you know, he was magical in those two games, you know, the one that followed. But, yeah, I didn't see it as a choke. Even looking back on it, I think you'd find it hard to say that they were in front. Some of their old issues do flare up, though, playing spin and batting too slow.
Yeah, this is now the second Callis knock, right, where he bats too slow.
Have we got another one?
I'm pretty sure we do have another one somewhere down the line.
It's not just him, to be fair, because there's some JP Duminis later.
There is
as well.
Some JP Duminis. We've, of course, mentioned Kirsten and Cullinan as well.
Yeah.
But I remember this game, I was what? 13? No, 15. Yes, I was 15. I was watching this game with no hope whatsoever because South Africa were quite strong. But it was that point where Afridi got Gibbs and de Villiers. Yeah. That, I feel, was the moment where Pakistan won that game. They never really looked back after that.
Yeah.
Because you get the two, you know, big fish. And, of course, South Africa have struggled versus spin every now and then. Pakistan had some of the best spinners in the world at that time. So, yeah, I also would say that they were more so undone by spin as opposed to them choking this one.
It
wasn't particularly a choke. Of course, people called it that because, hey, it's South Africa. Yeah. Anyway, let's move forward to 2011 ODI World Cup semi-final. Oh, sorry, quarter-final, I believe. Yes, it was a quarter versus New Zealand in Mirpur, Dhaka.
Yep.
And New Zealand didn't post a massive total. I think it was 222 runs to win for South Africa. But they folded for 172 all out after they were 108/2 in 24 overs. I believe this is the third slow Callis innings, if I'm not wrong. I might actually, I'm saying this on the top of my head, but I feel this was the one. And unfortunately, this in my books was a massive joke because South Africa were a better team than New Zealand.
Yeah.
This was not one of those great New Zealand teams, but
I don't think, yeah. I mean, I assume Nathan McCullum was their lead spinner.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, South Africa
had a really lucky wicket, if I remember, like a ball was hit into someone's toe and went back to slip or something silly.
I remember Jacob Oram also played well in this game.
Oh, wait, Vittori might have been playing as well.
Yeah.
So they would have had two spinners.
Yes.
But yeah, Jacob Oram, it was a fine New Zealand side, but it certainly wasn't one of the better New Zealand sides.
I mean, do the math, right? 108 for 2 in 24 overs means that 114 runs were required in 26 overs with 8 wickets in hand. You give me any surface in the world, you give me New York, okay? And I would back a team to chase that.
And look, here's my thing with that. It's, again, we talked about it in 99. You talked about it in 09. Hmm. So we're talking about what, in the space of 12 years, four major World Cups.
Yes.
Where they're chasing something.
Hmm.
They get themselves in a position where they don't lose many wickets. But they, to do that, they bat too slow.
Yes.
And so then they keep having to catch up. So guys come out and they're nervous and they're trying to do that.
Hmm.
They had some problem. I think that team had Yoann Botha at number 7.
Yes, I believe so.
So it was a little bit of a weaker batting lineup than we've seen in, say, 99 or some of the other tournaments. But they just crumbled. And, you know, watching, was it Heath? No, not Heath Mills. Was it Kyle Mills?
Kyle Mills, the 12th man, was sledging South Africa, wasn't
it? I've never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it. And I remember me and Ian O'Brien recreated it for Test Match Sofa using the Hansi. Actually, it might have been for Cricket Info. We couldn't believe what we were seeing. I think we were commentating that one together for Test Match Sofa. And we were like, is this happening? Is he actually sledging for 12th man? And it was just, and it obviously got to South Africa. You could see him. And it wasn't just that they lost. They lost by 40 runs.
And they were one of the best teams on display in this entire World Cup. They defeated India in the group stage in a game which they were losing, and they choked India, if you remember.
Yeah.
That was one of the finest games that Dale Steyn has ever played in limited overs cricket. And which is why it was rather disappointing that they had far more quality than New Zealand. And then they crumbled when they needed 112 runs in 26 overs with 8 wickets in hand. So I was actually having a debate with my pro sports co-host where I was saying that 2011 was a bigger choke in my eyes than 99.
Yeah, I think that's undoubtedly true because there wasn't even as much pressure on them.
Yeah.
Right?
If 99 was a choke, and I'm still like in two minds calling it that, this was definitely a choke and a half.
I think if you look back at it, New Zealand were playing that game like South Africa were going to choke. I don't think that's how Australia were playing the game in 99 because it was...
Yes.
They were in front.
And Australia had great admiration for the way South Africans played their cricket back in the day.
In 99, South Africa were the best white ball team in the world. Now, Australia passed them in that World Cup and never looked back. But at that stage, I think most people in the world thought that they were a better drilled team.
Yeah.
2011... They played some really good cricket, but there were obviously problems. If you've got Yoann Botha at number 7, don't get me into Marco Jansen, but you know what I mean?
We will get into Marco Jansen in a bit.
Obviously.
But before that, we're going to go to 2014 T20 World Cup semi-final versus India. Once again in Mirpur Dhaka. So not a happy hunting ground for South Africa. And South Africa batted first in this game. They actually posted quite a healthy 172 in the first innings. And then they had India at 77 for 2 in 9.3 overs, which back in the day was a pretty good position to be in, right? And they were ahead of this game. Then they ran into a red-hot Virat Kohli who kind of took the game away from South Africa. But that said, keeping all of that in mind, you look at the scorecard. And A.B. de Villiers and David Miller, two of the most destructive batters in T20 cricket history, forget that South African team, they played a grand total of 20 deliveries out of 120. And Albie Mokel, who was also, you know, in his prime, he never even got to bat in that game. So you have to kind of come to the conclusion.
What did J.P. do meaning make in that game?
40-odd or 40-odd?
Yeah.
I think it was
45 or 40.
Yeah.
And he batted from like this fifth over through to the end. And you're just like, wow. I mean, I don't know what to say about something like that. I feel it just keeps happening. It's this pattern that we keep seeing. They probably were unlucky to run into Kohli in that form.
Yeah, sure.
And teams usually, I think, was it 10 overs and 100 runs is probably quite unlikely for a team to chase at that period on Bangladesh pitches.
Yeah.
But you look back at 45 or 40, not out, and he batted the whole innings, and you do think to yourself, my God, what would you think? I honestly think he would be retired out now.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you have batting depth, which is not a constant theme in all of these South African teams. 99 has it. I'm not sure how much batting depth was there in 96.
96. I would have to go back and have a look at because McMillan might.
He was playing that game.
Yeah, so McMillan and Callis, so they would have had some.
Fanny could bat?
No.
No?
Fanny. I love that you called him Fanny. Uh-huh. And we should rename him Fanny. they still would have had some batting depth. I mean, the all-rounder thing really, it's once sort of Callis starts to age out, right? Up until that point, they've got Pollock, Klusner. They've even got guys like Nicky Bowyer and Derek Crooks and all, you know, Brian McMillan, all these different guys. And then it just stops.
Yeah.
And they end up with Pethla Cuello and Janssen and Pretorius. It really just gone.
Yeah. Wayne Parnell was their number seven in one of these games, which we will come to in a bit. But I'd have to say, if you look at 2014, it was a good South African team, right? They had a good campaign. They ultimately lost to an Indian team, which was on fire. And Virat Kohli, you know, was player of the tournament. Mm. If I have to come to a conclusion for this particular semi-final, they just left runs out on the field when they were batting. That's what cost them the game.
And that's not a joke. That's style.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this game is not even close to a joke. They were never truly ahead of it. No. They were slightly ahead of it when they had India.
When Rahane was batting slow.
Yes. Yeah. But then again, India had 8 wickets in hand.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were completely out of it either.
Agreed.
And this was, you know, an Indian team which, you know, maybe should have clinched a trophy in that particular period, right? It's the start of their drought.
Yeah.
They didn't win from that tournament onwards till just recently. So it's interesting how those two teams met at that point and then once again in a final this time around. Anyway, coming to 2015, the ODI World Cup semi-final versus New Zealand in Auckland. The Grant Elliott game.
Yeah.
Right? It did rain in this game. But Jared, if anything, I feel like New Zealand were the team that rain kind of... South Africa were... the benefactors.
Yeah.
In this game.
It made the chase quite tricky, didn't it?
Yeah, because they had scored, 281, I believe, in 43 overs. And New Zealand needed to chase 298.
Yeah.
So they got a 17-run bump. And 298 in 43 overs in a World Cup semi-final.
Huge.
It's massive.
It really is. We don't talk about how brilliant New Zealand was in that World Cup and how that was just an absolutely next-level chase. So. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think that was absolutely massive.
I mean, that's the one game which has basically cemented Grant Elliott's name into cricket legend. That's his game. That's the Grant Elliott game. And it's ironic that Grant Elliott was South African.
Yes.
And he had moved to New Zealand because he could not get an opportunity to play for South Africa. And over in the other squad, or 11, South Africa dropped Kyle Abbott, who was in fine form. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Abbott ultimately even went cold pack because he was kind of done due to not being handed enough opportunities because of the quota system, which was in full flow at that point. Big Vern played that game ahead of Kyle Abbott.
I don't know why Kyle Abbott chose Colpack, but that era that he was playing in, he would have had Steyn, Morkel, Philander, all ahead of him anyway. So I don't think it's fair to say he wasn't picked because of the quota system. And Rabada was coming through at that stage too.
He must have just started.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. Kyle Abbott might say, because you never know. And sometimes some of those players say it was a quota system and later admit it wasn't Neil Wayne.
I mean, Farhan Behardeen played a lot of cricket back in that day, right?
He had a really good record for a while. Not in international cricket, in T20 cricket. But anyway, the point being is that particular decision was for the quota. And I think that's a really important one, because I remember writing about it at the time and ever since, where I was like, I get the representation matters. And I'm a big fan of that sort of stuff. But I don't understand how a team with one fewer non-white player winning that semi-final isn't more important than losing that semi-final with Vernon Philander in. But the issue was that Philander was injured. That's why he shouldn't have been playing. It wasn't because we don't think Philander was great.
Also, I feel like the quota system makes sense. Representation makes sense at, you know, domestic level. Make sure that there are enough players from all the different, you know, backgrounds. But when it comes to picking your national team, I feel like the best players need to play.
So I think the thing with the way quotas and everything work is it's about representation, right? So if you look at Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's a young Greek kid. He's not really into basketball. He looks up, there's a young Greek basketball player beating the USA. He becomes a basketballer. So you can't just disregard that. The problem with that on its own is that there were non-white players that were going to be playing in that game anyway. Right. Yeah. And then on top of that, it doesn't really matter about representation or anything else if Vernon Philander wasn't fit. And Vernon Philander wasn't fit for that game. They made a decision that doesn't really follow.
Yeah, and not just a half-fit Vernon Philander, but also the fact that South Africa's fifth bowler in that game was a combination of JP Duminy and AB de Villiers. Now, granted, AB...
Who?
AB de Villiers.
Okay.
He bowled three overs, went for only 21 runs, which I think is a bit of an accomplishment if you think about it that way. But JP went for a lot of runs. And the irony that Grant Elliott, a South African, won New Zealand that game, I mean, you'd have to say the curse ran pretty strong in that game.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, if you look at the way they actually played, they put some runs on the board. They got completely blown out by Brendan McCullum playing the way that he did. They maybe weren't ready for that. Their bowlers didn't go up to it. But yeah, when it comes down to it, that was pretty much a game where you wouldn't say they choked. It's just the other team came very strong and they had AB de Villiers as their semi-finalist bowler. I mean, you don't deserve to qualify.
You don't really. And I mean, South Africa was such a great team that they shouldn't have gotten their composition wrong for that particular game, right? And I'm not saying New Zealand wasn't a great team because that New Zealand was...
Yeah.
Arguably better than 2019 in some ways, right? That was how strong they looked. And had Baz done well in the final, you never know. Because they did defeat Australia in the group stages.
Yeah, that was and that was a weird game on its own. But no, you're right. I think they had plenty of chance.
That's a Trent Bolt game, right?
It was the game where they tried to chase it in the smallest amount of runs, in the smallest amount of time possible.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to 2022. The T20 World Cup group stage, South Africa were looking strong and they only had to defeat the Netherlands to qualify, but they lost to the Netherlands. However, that was not the reason why they couldn't make it. I mean, it was one of the reasons, but not the only reason, because there was a game versus Zimbabwe, which they were winning, and that game got rained out. So once again, rain comes to spoil the party. And this is one of those instances where you actually can say that rain played spoil sport through and through in a way.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the points just to see how much it affected them and how much it didn't.
I mean, that's the reason why Pakistan edged them.
It was it?
Okay. For the semi-final spot.
Yeah, so that game, I remember there was this South African fan who was going nuts because I was like, and I didn't care who won or who lost, but I was watching it going, this professional cricketer should not be playing in this environment. It was one of the wettest games I've ever watched. And they kept playing. And eventually the Zimbabwean players were just falling over on purpose, but because of just to say, what are we doing out here? So that was really important. But they were still playing the Netherlands. And I know the Netherlands played some really good cricket there. They got themselves in a situation in the chase again, though.
Yeah.
Where they batted too slow. They put pressure on themselves. You wouldn't say that they choked because they never got in front of the game, but they put pressure on themselves again. And then, of course, you can't overlook the fact that so many of the Dutch players are either born in South Africa, learnt their cricket in South Africa, or are South Africans but have a passport for the Netherlands. Like, you know, all that different variation all comes through.
In that very game, in fact, Colin Ackerman, a South African, performed, right, with the bat. And Roelof van der Merwe...
And Brendan Glover, the bowler as well.
Exactly. But Roelof is funny because he was a part of South Africa's semi-finalist team in the 2019-20 World Cup that they lost to Pakistan, the Afridi game. Roelof was part of that and he was the one who took that catch and dismissed David Miller. And I mean, I'm with you that it's not a choke. It's not a full-on choke.
No.
But South Africa required, what, 159 to win?
Yeah. I mean, they should have chased it.
So they should have chased it, right?
They
had no business losing that game.
They just never really got themselves ahead of the game. That's why we're saying it's not a choke.
We're not saying
they should have won. Yeah. Shouldn't have won. They should have won.
There is a bit of a choke element, though. Mm-hmm. A slight little element. I'm not saying that they choked completely, but you'd have to say that chasing 159 versus the Netherlands to qualify for the semi-finals and then bottling it, I don't know, man. They really shouldn't have. They should have gotten over the line.
Who was their number 7 in that game?
That's the game in which Wayne Parnell was their number 7.
No, that's why when we talk about chokes and I talk about style, people get really upset. And it's like, well, if you've got Wayne Parnell at number 7, you're always a chance of losing 4 wickets.
At this point, I would say there's a trend, not just with respect to style, but also the squad composition.
Yeah.
They keep getting it wrong. And I mean, Alan Donald played or missed out on that game for Paul Adams. And in this game, Wayne Parnell was the number seven.
A.B. de Villiers.
A.B. de Villiers is your...
Kyle Abbott.
Yeah. Fifth bowler, all of that stuff. So...
All the way to Marco Janssen now.
Mm-hmm. All the way to Marco Janssen now. So come knockouts, somehow their squad composition always kind of becomes the Achilles heel. And that maybe gets... Or that conversation gets lost in translation because everyone is focusing on the C word.
Yeah, I'm 100%. This is where you now. This is what my book would be about.
Yeah,
stop getting it wrong, and everyone else should stop also getting it wrong when they talk about what South Africa get wrong. Yeah.
Potential publishers, there is a solid case over here. Think about it. Just think about it. Jared can write it for you. Anyway, of course, that Netherlands team had a fair few South Africans in the in their squad, and this continues to happen to them.
Yeah,
right. Happened with Elliot, happened with the Netherlands, and...
There is something kind of funny about, like, we all say that South Africans are cursed. It's like, well, when they're wearing a South African top, they're cursed. They're not specifically cursed when they're playing for another country.
Hmm. And I mean, the roll-off one is kind of the epitome.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy who's playing for South Africa in 2009. He goes to the semi-final and plays that semi-final as well versus Pakistan, and then knocks South Africa out in 2022 to help Pakistan make it to the semi-final.
He was also, let's be honest, he's a fantastic cricketer, but he was like finished, like physically. Mm. To run back and take that catch at his age when he's hiding at short third, it's a magnificent effort. And you just know that if that was if he was wearing a South African shirt, it would have like landed on his head and exploded or something.
Yeah, plus the celebration. Mm. I mean, I forgot about roll-off celebration, actually, when we did the celebration quick picks.
Mm.
That was
a good one. Yeah.
A really good one that we completely forgot. Anyway, time to come to 2024 then. The latest World Cup campaign or T20 World Cup campaign in which South Africa came closer than they ever came before, right? They've never played a final in a World Cup prior. And this time they did versus India in Barbados. And they were chasing 177. And Heinrich Klassen smashed 2 fours and 2 sixes versus Akshar Patel in the 15th over. Then they needed 30 of 30.
Yeah.
Jasprit Bumrah bowls a really good over. Then they need 26 of 24. Klassen gets out. And by the end of Bumrah's second over, they need 20 runs in 2 overs. South Africa lose that game. And if you think about it, any bowling lineup in the world, you need a runner ball for 5 overs with 6 wickets in hand. Even if you have... Marco Janssen at number 7. You'd have to back the batting team at that point. And that is why, as much as I appreciate the genius of Jasprit Bumrah, right? And the fact that Janssen was at 7 and the fact that they promoted Maharaj ahead of Rabada, I still feel like this is a generational joke.
The only thing I would say against it is I don't think you can wipe off Bumrah and Janssen and Maharaj from this. The other thing I would say is that in this particular tournament, we had seen teams chasing a runner ball quite a few times and not do it.
Yeah, that's fair.
It wasn't a normal tournament from that standpoint.
But this wasn't New York or semi-finals Trinidad.
It was a slightly better wicket. I give you that. I don't think it was as bad as some of the other pitches that we had seen. But it was something, if this happened in the middle of the IPL when everyone was scoring at 3 runs a ball, you'd be like, that has to be a joke. So I think in this case, I think it was a combination of Jasprit Bumrah was incredible. That batting lineup, I mean, I've been writing about it for three years saying that this could happen. and the pressure got to them. I think that's fair. No, I don't think anyone would say there wasn't an element of choke in that one because once you're in that position, you should still win the game. There was some unlucky things too, like the Rishabh Pant sore knee.
Yeah, but then again, a lot of teams do that, right? That is part of strategy.
I don't know whether his knee was sore or if it wasn't sore. But what I mean is, from a South African point of view, that happened at the exact wrong time.
Yeah, but also if it wasn't a sore knee, I feel like delaying the game in that manner is completely fine.
Oh, no. That's what I mean. Yeah. I think I tweeted at the time, if it was me, I would have gone off and got Samson to come out. I would have stretched it out as long as possible because I thought that was their best chance. And they got a wicket next ball, right? So it did actually work. So I think with all that in mind, it's still the pressure certainly got to them. But there were a few dominoes that fell towards that.
Mm. No, definitely. I'm not, again, Jasprit Bumrah is on a different planet at the moment, right? He is experiencing one of those peaks that we might have never experienced prior. We've never seen something like this, never witnessed anything like it. So I give India that. I also give... Rohit some credit over here after getting the Akshar decision wrong.
Yeah.
He came good towards the end. I feel like when he brought on Arshdeep versus Maharaj. That was really smart.
Yeah, bowling across him.
Exactly. So he kind of, you know, did Maharaj for the angle over there. And Maharaj, who was supposed to get a single, blocked out, or not blocked out, but played and missed for like three deliveries. So it's not like India did not like deserve this. Yeah, they definitely played their part and they outsmarted South Africa and won those key battles. Come on.
But
30 of 30, what, 27 of 28?
Yeah.
26 of 24.
It's definitely a joke.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a joke. But on a closing note,
yeah,
what would you say was the bigger joke? And I'll give you three options over here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to put in 99, right?
Okay.
Overall. Let's put in 2011, because I feel like that is an underrated joke. And then you've got 2024.
I think 2011 is the biggest joke.
Hmm.
Because they were in a quarterfinal against the thing they were far better than.
Hmm.
If you look at 99 and 2004, they're playing two great teams.
Yeah.
Right? So I think we all thought India was the best team in this tournament. So even if South Africa played good cricket, we still have some questions about South Africa.
Yes.
In 1999, South Africa were the best tournament team coming in, but by midway through, Australia had just found another level and obviously went on to win that tournament quite easily against Pakistan in the final and then didn't lose forever, right?
Hmm.
So you would have to say, at least in that situation, they had maximum amount of pressure put on them. The 2011 New Zealand side with a 12th man sledging you. I think that's the worst joke.
Yeah.
But I think the more interesting thing for me is that there's no year where I couldn't find an element of them playing a huge part in this because of, as you said before, selection, because of the batting style specifically. I think that plays a bigger part than the jokes do and the rain do. But now it is. It's rain, it's curse, it's style, and it's choke.
Mm.
And it's almost like South Africa have just, until they win, it doesn't really matter what we say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like there are all these people that, you know, we've gone through 10 games and the main video went up and everyone's like, oh, you didn't mention this game. You didn't. And it's like, these are the games where they had legitimate chances and they were in the games at certain times and things went against them. They've actually had other bad World Cup campaigns, some of which where they haven't even got anywhere near.
There's the Umar Gul game in which they were winning it and then Gul comes and smacks a few sixes. I think that was the 2012
and did they lose to
World Cup.
India and Australia after that?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So that's a terrible World Cup.
And that was a very good South African team.
Yeah,
also, 2007 ODI World Cup, great South African team, completely got demolished by Australia in the semi-final. So there are obviously other tournaments in which, you know, they could have done better, but didn't.
Yeah.
But I feel like these were the ones which were more important in terms of them.
This was, know, I think, what I was really trying to get at.
Closer
encounters of the green kind.
Yeah.
What I was really trying to get at is, these are the games that I think define the legacy of South Africa in World Cups. And you go through them, and I do think there's the two themes that probably we talk about the most, which is the choking element and the rain element, actually plays a smaller role. The way they play, and then I wouldn't say bad luck with the curse, but to be that good at white ball cricket for this long and not to have accidentally won a World Cup. It's what I kept saying about India, right? I kept saying, all these Indian fans, oh, we choke. And I was like, do you know what? Even by accident, you should have won a World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, or a tournament or ICC event within the last 10 years. And with South Africa, you're like, how have they not? Right? And that Champions Trophy is the only thing they won. No one cares. And it was before...
it was called the Champions Trophy.
Yeah,
it's the ICC knockout tournament, which is just like another Nehru Cup at that point in time.
So,
also, I feel like South Africa, you know, we've talked about all of these different games. And consistently, we've seen elements of them getting the selection wrong.
Yeah.
Them promoting a batter they shouldn't have, right? Them playing too slow. It's a recurring theme. So you have to factor all of these things in. And of course, there will be the odd time where rain played a huge part.
Yeah.
And then also, there were a few chokes in there. But I mean, when you look at it analytically, there's a lot more to this than just the C word or rain.
I think so. I think that if I was working with the team, I would actually, not that we'd show them our video or our podcast or anything, but I would actually go through all these games and go, we keep doing the same thing and it keeps failing. And if you look at what India did, you know, with the way that Virat and Rohit changed themselves for this last World Cup, that's what South Africa need. They need senior players to go, fuck it.
Yeah.
We might get bowled out for nothing, but for the next three World Cups, let's try and play the way that we play. Because this is, you look at this team on paper and you're like, this is a really exciting team.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the same thing keeps happening. You just have, just keep your foot on till the end and just one time you hope you stay on the road.
it felt like they might have had that this time, you know? Like, the at least the type of players that were playing in that team, you felt like they just...
But that's the thing. How can Klaas,
go full throttle.
How can Klaas and Stubbs and Miller play the way we want them to play when they look up at that number seven and eight position?
We're not going to blame Klaassen at all.
No, I'm not blaming them. But what I'm saying is, it's hard for them to actually be the players that we know they can be within this setup.
That's fair. That's fair because it's the Evan Gulbis effect. Yeah.
I'm glad we brought it back to Devon. We've
come full circle over here. One final question. And this is just, I mean, your opinion. I'll give mine as well. What do you think out of all of these games that we've covered was the biggest heartbreak for South African fans?
I mean, 99 is the one that will always haunt them, right? But because of 2024, I think it's because of the accumulated sadness and the fact that they did get it into the final with 30 off 30 and whatever it was, 27 off 28 or whatever it was at one stage. I think this is the biggest one.
Yeah.
Even if 99 probably still looms larger, and you can make an argument that the biggest shit show that they did was probably the Netherlands game, right? So there are other games that may have been worse.
True.
But when it comes down to it, I think this is the one.
Also, just because of the fact that they had never made a World Cup final prior to this 2024 T20 World Cup, there was always a what-if element.
Yeah.
What if we won that and then played the final? But had they won this final, they would have a World Cup. So that's why I feel like this will definitely hurt more. And commiseration to South Africa's fans. Just don't lose hope. You've got a good, exciting team. And let's see what happens in the future. But that wraps up this episode also of Footmarks. So if you enjoyed it, give us a like and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And a quick reminder to all of you, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop for all of the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll be back with another episode of Footmarks next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.